This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mecklenburg School Superintendent Dr. Heath Morrison joined us on this program shortly after he came to town just under a year ago. And today, as we approach the end of the school year and the end of his first year at the helm, he joins us again. And he does so just days after publishing the budget request he'll be sending to County Commission. It's a budget with a bottom line figure $28 million higher than this year's budget, if I have these numbers right. I'm number challenged. If granted, it would return the system to pre-recession numbers. In this hour, we're going to talk about that request, what will happen if the schools get the money, what will happen if they don't, and we'll get Dr. Morrison's impressions of the state of the schools and his plans for the future. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How's the first year been? Has this been? I know the answer is going to be yes, but has this been a good move for you?
It really has been. The community has welcomed myself, my family. We've made a great adjustment to Charlotte. I never get tired of people saying welcome to Charlotte. There's just a lot of sincerity the way people welcome individuals in this community, and it's just been a great transition professionally and personally for myself and my family.
To refresh people's memories, you came to us from Montgomery County Schools in Maryland via the Washoe County Schools in Nevada.
Reno.
Thank you. Reno, Nevada. And the school system there has less than half the number of students that Charlotte-Mecklenburg has. So aside from the difference in the numbers of kids you have to deal with, what were the biggest differences that you discovered here as you were trying to get your footing and understand the landscape and make the inroads necessary to do what you want to do here?
Well, you know, I think we had chatted about this before. Montgomery County Public Schools is very similar in terms of size to Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Matter of fact, it's a little bit bigger. So I've certainly been familiar with the school district, the size and scope of Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Washoe County, Reno, Nevada, is about 55,000 students, so a little under half. But even at 55,000 students, it was still one of the largest school districts in the entire country. So very familiar with large school districts and the complexities of trying to run one. As far as similarities and differences, the differences are certainly being out west brings a little bit of a different culture shift. That it was, but the job is, you know, trying to put forth a vision, listen to the community, making sure that vision is a shared vision, interacting with local, state, national leaders to try to move that vision forward. So there's probably a lot more similarities than there are differences, to be perfectly forthright.
Did the vision come after the listening, or did the vision come because did it come from the school board who hired you?
Well, I think it's a combination. You know, the school board certainly had ideas about this type of superintendent it wanted. There was a great match between this school board and myself, and I've appreciated their leadership and support since coming on board. And so I think all of us as leaders have certain core values and beliefs that we try to lead from. But as I said, when I first came into town, I didn't come with a game plan. I didn't say, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it. I had some ideas. I'd done my homework. I, you know, do say I'm a teacher on special assignment, so I try to take a great sense of pride in being prepared. But when I came into town, I said I was going to listen. And so visiting every school, spending significant time at the school, talking to teachers, principals, and support staff and parents, community meetings, meeting with really literally thousands of individuals in this community. And then in November, having the opportunity to put those ideas forward and our plan the way forward with 8 goals that I do believe shows how intently we were listening.
You did a lot of listening, I will tell you that.
Yeah.
You know that.
And continue to do so.
What did you learn that you found surprising or you didn't expect from your research before you got here?
I think the thing I always say is that there's always a great history and a culture to any community. As a social studies teacher, I'd always say you have to look at history, which informs the future. And so trying to understand the complexity of this school district, how it became a unified school district, how it's grown into one of the largest school districts in the country. What is very interesting and I think different about Charlotte-Mecklenburg is you have large school districts that are basically city school districts, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York City, and then you have other large school districts that are mostly county school districts, Fairfax County, even Montgomery County. Charlotte-Mecklenburg is one of the few in the country of this size that is both a county and a city. And I think that comes with a lot of unique challenges, but even more so unique opportunities.
Is that a good thing? Because a lot of people at one point in the not-too-distant past really wanted to break the school system up into smaller districts.
You know, what I always say when people ask about that is there's 15,000 school districts in the country. Most are below five schools and 5,000 students. There's a lot of not very good small school districts. And matter of fact, if you kind of did a math equation, there's probably a lot more proportionally underperforming, not very good smaller school districts than large school districts. So I don't think it's about the size of the district. I think it's about the intent, the desire to educate every child, and the strategy and the support of the community to truly educate every student. I think it is a blessing and one of the unique opportunities of being the superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg is to take that the very best of being a city and a county. We belong to the Council of Great City Schools, a very important organization nationally. We just helped form a large county organization of school districts. So we partner and collaborate with Chicago, L.A., New York, but we also partner with Fairfax County, Montgomery County, Gwinnett in Georgia, and we try to learn and share what we're doing with colleagues across the country.
You haven't made a lot of wholesale changes. Is that because you're still in the learning stage or because there weren't a lot of wholesale changes that were needed, or is that coming down the pike now that you have a year under your belt?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think what's really important is to come in and honor the organization as you find it. Mm-hmm. This is a school district that is known nationally as a very good school district. It had won the Broad Prize for Urban School Excellence the year before I arrived. So what I really wanted to do is to find out where we're strong. Every time I was going out in the community, I was asking, where are we a strong school district? Where are we a good school district? And then just as importantly, where do we need to improve? And so what I want to do is build off of strength. I'm not one of those people that just comes in and says, this is the way I want to do it. This is the way I prefer to have things run. You know, we have over 18,000 employees. To have 18,000 employees change the way they do business just because I have a preferred way of doing things, I don't think that's good business.
The phone rang and I lost my train of thought. That's okay. When you arrived, you faced some situations that were left over. Among them, what was described to me on many occasions by teachers and parents and even students, fairly low morale among the staff. Have you been able to turn that around?
You know, I think we chatted about this before. Across the country right now, I would say, and there's research, a lot of newspapers, New York Times has run stories on this, teacher morale across the country is at a pretty much all-time high in terms of teachers feeling disrespected, being concerned about the direction of education. Teachers have had to endure a lot of budget cuts, not enough pay raises, having to do more with less. And so across the country, teacher morale has really been impacted by that. And so when I first came to town, what I wanted to do was really try to assess what is the current state. We started to work with a national company to do a survey, and I actually put a halt to the process at one point because I said, you know, I don't want to do a big survey that's our questions. Let's get teachers in to make sure we're asking the right questions. We brought over 300 teachers to come in and help us ask the right questions. We did that survey. We've learned a lot. We've made that survey public. We have one of my 22 community task forces is around teacher engagement and morale. We will continue to focus on that. I don't think that ever gets turned around because it might improve. But if you're not constantly looking at the morale of your workforce, if you don't create a culture of trust and respect, we've got to, and this is one of the unique opportunities, I think, here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. We in this country have got to lift up the profession of teaching as an amazing profession. We want to let our teachers know they are heroes and sheroes. They're doing amazing things every day. And we've got to honor them. We've got to respect them. We've got to create the cultures in each building that lifts up their important work, helps them do that work collaboratively. We need to compensate them correctly. You know, in our state, we rank 45th, 46th out of 50 states in terms of teacher salary. Our teachers in North Carolina rank $10,000 below the national average. So there's a lot of work that we have to do, but I think it begins by honoring these amazing individuals. And as a country and as a state, and I think we can start it in this community, really making sure that people understand that that this profession must be respected.
Where does that start? Does it start outside the school system, or does it start inside
the school system? It has to start inside the school district. If I'm not modeling that, if our school board's not modeling that, if the top leadership in our school district is not modeling that, then it's hard to expect anybody else to do that as well. I say all the time, I consider myself a teacher on special assignment. My job is support staff. When people say, what's the hierarchy of the school district? I've always said it's more like a circle than a hierarchy flow chart. In the middle of that circle are our students. The next circle is our teachers. They impact students every day. The next circle is support staff, and the support staff is everything from the secretary, the building service worker, the principal, to the superintendent. We support teaching and learning, and that's just it's one of my core beliefs, and my job is to support excellent and inspire teaching and learning.
But prior to your arrival, one of the reasons that morale was low is that the feet teachers, at least the ones that I spoke to, felt unrespected. They felt powerless, as a matter of fact. They felt as though they were the front lines, and they really understood what it was that their students needed, and yet they couldn't provide it because they had to teach to the test, they had to worry about standardized testing, they had to worry about, well, if this classroom doesn't do well, it's going to reflect on me, not on the students, not on the parents, on me, that when students act up in class, I have no recourse, that when the parents are called in, they side with Johnny and not with me, and I'm the teacher and I know what's going on in my own classroom. So it seemed like a hopeless losing situation. If you're going to change the atmosphere and you're going to give teachers the respect that they should have in our society, because they do teach the next generation of people who are going to run the place, where does that begin? How do you do that? How do you reinstill that in everybody?
It's multifaceted and it's ongoing. Like I said, it's never a completed project. It's always a state of constantly making that a focus. You know, I always look at businesses that are really successful. Southwest Airlines, for example, they are so intentional about the culture of their buildings. They care deeply about how people are treated and how they're valued. Some of the most important work we're going to do over this next year is making sure we create a culture of trust and respect in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. And that's going to take 18,000 individuals coming together to talk about what that would look like. How do you operate in a culture of respect? Some of the other things that we want to do and our task force that we've got, which is made up of teachers, administrators, parents, community members, looking at this, is how do we recognize teachers for the important work that they do? How do we lift up their spirits? How do we do things to respect and honor them? But just as importantly, how do we make sure that we help in their own professional development? Many of our teachers are worried. There are new evaluations coming from our state. And so if you're a teacher and you've been rated effective for a long time and now all of a sudden you're told that you're not effective, how do you help that? So we help build capacity. So one of the things in the budget I proposed is coaching positions, job embedded. You can't just drop in professional development and say, help it stuck. You got to have people right there in the buildings, in the classrooms, working alongside with those teachers, helping model lessons, having help build capacity, really respecting our teachers to help building their capacity. And so again, there's no one answer to this. It's an ongoing engagement. And it's about listening. You know, we have surveyed our teachers a lot this year. Every time we're looking to try to make important decisions, we are reaching out to ask our teachers and our employees for their input. And I think a big part of any organization in the culture is, do I feel listened to? Doesn't mean I'm always going to have it done the way I want it, but just that respect of we're taking the time to listen. We are asking for your input, and also making sure we communicate better. Every Friday, I send something out called the Friday Focus, and it's interesting. If it hasn't gotten out by about 1 o'clock, I'll be in a school and people say, "Are we getting the Friday Focus today?" But it's my direct message to our employees that just tells them some of the things that are going on, trying to make sure they hear things first, and even something that we've started this year. Any big important announcement about CMS, I always try to make sure we send that message to our employees first. So even on Tuesday, right before we unveiled our school board budget, I sent that to our employees first.
We have to stop. We're going to come right back with Dr. Heath Morrison, CMS superintendent. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Rural Hills Scottish Festival, April 20th and 21st. Two stages of Celtic music, Scottish food, Highland dance, a variety of competitions, kids' activities, and more. Details at ruralhill.net. And Heath Springs Residential Care Center, providing family-oriented long-term assisted living for the elderly in historic Heath Springs, South Carolina, for almost 20 years. Details at heathspringsrcc.com. Last week, we were to have a guest to talk about the changing climate and its effects on human populations. We had a little snafu, but he will be with us tomorrow. We promise. He's a local guy, has discovered some fascinating social changes among native Alaskans, and we're going to talk about what he's discovered and about a movement called Climate Convergence. That's all tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, North Korea continues to warn of nuclear war. They've advised foreigners to leave South Korea, assessing the threat from North Korea.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. Our guest today is Dr. Heath Morrison, superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. It's been almost, I guess, 8 months, 9 months since we visited. He just released his budget for the coming year, which asks for a lot more money. We'll talk about that in a few minutes here. There were a number of teachers and parents and students when you arrived here who were fed up with the amount of standardized testing that was being administered. I believe that you have spoken out against these tests. I think you also said that some of these state standardized tests were a waste of time. Pretty brave words. And just a few nights ago at a school board meeting, there were a group of people who came dressed, I'm told, as zombies. And WFAE's Lisa Miller asked them why.
So what brings you out dressing like a zombie tonight?
Well, we are basically making a statement about standardized testing, which we think turns our kids into zombies, that it doesn't really promote critical thinking and creative thinking. It pushes our kids to think that there's always a right answer, instead of looking at, you know, a problem more critically, more in a more complex way.
What's your take on that?
Well, you know, first of all, I have to admit I'm a big fan of the whole zombies genre, and it's one of my guilty pleasures. So while I like the whole motif, I certainly, in education, I'd hate to think we're doing anything on a national, state, or local level to turn our kids into zombies. But I get a chance to talk to some of the students and to Pam Grundy, who organized that, and I appreciate their advocacy for this. You know, I am certainly not anti-testing. I am not anti-accountability. I'm a big believer in accountability. And testing is a component of that. But the tests have to be appropriate tests. They have to be worthy tests. You know, I always start off with a test is fundamentally an opportunity for us to evaluate, did the student learn the material? Did they master the standard? And a test gives us the ability to accelerate a student or remediate a student. But if any test doesn't fundamentally help us better understand if the student mastered important material, then I have to question why we're doing it. I also always question what's the right ratio of amount of time on testing versus teaching? We're giving so many tests that are required by the state, by the national government, that it's very hard to find the appropriate amount of time for teaching, and I think that's critically important. And then the last part is, you know, I am such a believer, our job is to prepare our students for the 21st century. The type of jobs our students need in the future are going to be so different. Our students are going to be looking not for jobs, they're going to have to be creating their own jobs. We've got to stress 21st century skills, collaboration, critical thinking, problem solving, entrepreneurship. If we are not assessing those things, even under the new tests that are being developed, it's still about content mastery. And so I want to see us do more to assess essential skills, balance the amount of testing with the appropriate amount of testing, and make sure that the tests are appropriate tests.
Can you teach and then test a person's ability to think critically? Or does it have to be done some other way?
I believe that there are ways that you can do that. It's a different type of assessment. When I was in Maryland, we had these assessments called the Maryland State Performance Assessment Program, and it really focused on a lot of those things. So you would actually have students work collaboratively. They would perform an experiment, and then they would write a reflective essay on their experiment, or they would have some situation. They would have to debate it, and then they would have to write a persuasive essay. You know, there are things that we can start doing with portfolios, things with technology. We can absolutely assess these important skills, these 21st century skills. The other part, too, is, you know, when people say we shouldn't be teaching to a test, I fundamentally agree with that, but I kind of push back a little to say this. Tell me, what is the test? When I taught AP US History, if you were teaching to that test, it's not a bad test to teach to, because students had to have a good foundation of U.S. history. They had to be able to embed important historical information and documents into their own reflective thinking. So they had something called a database question, where they had to pull important historical documents and write a persuasive essay on not only those documents, but their knowledge of U.S. history, and then as well as to be able to write critical information from a persuasive perspective. If you're teaching students to be successful on that type of test, then you're probably hitting a lot of those 21st century skills.
Well, because we had a theoretical physicist on the show yesterday, Dr. Sean Carroll, who has written a book about the Higgs boson particle, and he said that in science there isn't always a right answer. There may be several answers, and the important thing to know is how you got to that answer.
That's exactly right. You know, I think the old paradigm was we have to teach kids the what. What we're really having to do now in order to prepare kids for the future is it's more about the why and the how. And so we used to, you probably had this happen, you know, your U.S. history teacher said, take out a sheet of paper, number 1 through 10, give me the names of the first 10 presidents. Now, how many times since you graduated from high school, if you had to be able to recall instantaneously the first 10 presidents of the United States? And you know what? If I ask you today, you can pull out your personal device, and before I finish the question,
that's right,
you've got the information. Now, the important thing is, why is that important? What did those first 10 presidents do that set precedents that still impact us today? And so that's what we have to stress. And again, we can assess, but I just question how many tests we need to assess the information we want our students to know and be able to do.
Have the number of standardized tests decreased since you've been here? Will they in the future? Do you have any control over that?
Right? Well, no, and they're going to increase. Again, there is testing that we're required to do for federal standards. There's a test that we're required to do from the state. And we're actually going to be increasing the number of tests over the next several years as part of our state accountability. And so what I'm doing right now is we are certainly engaged in conversations with our North Carolina Department of Public Instruction, and we appreciate that partnership. And we are working with other school districts to see how we can balance this amount of testing. And certainly we're looking inward, too. I've challenged our accountability staff. I want to know the tests that we're requiring of our students that maybe we can pull back on. Again, you know, not anti-testing, but let's balance this so that we got an appropriate amount of testing to allow our teachers the gift of being able to have time to teach.
Let's talk about the budget. In previous conversations with your predecessor, actually predecessors, about budget, it came up many times that the process here seems backward. Because of the school calendar, you have to budget ahead of time because you got to know. I mean, September is looming large on your calendar. So you've got to know how many students you anticipate, what the needs are going to be, how much money you're going to require to do that, what schools need to be open, how they're going to be staffed, et cetera, et cetera. And that has to
sound like you've done this before.
Yeah, I have. That has to be done before the county does their budget, before the state, which you get money from, does their budget. Is this the way it's done all across the country, or is this something peculiar about us?
You know, I think there are so many different ways that different states do their budgeting. This one is rather complex, and it creates a lot of uncertainties. You know, doing your school district budget is not unlike the process of doing your household budget. Find out how much income are we going to have, what are our required expenditures, and then hopefully have a little bit more income than expenditures to do some things that you think are in the best interest of your family. In our state and in our district, the challenges are that the majority of our funds derive from the state, but the state doesn't finalize its budget until later in the process, and so you are really trying to come up with your best estimates of what ultimately is going to be your major funding source. Now, the challenges of this year are by the there's three major ways we get our revenue from the federal government, which is the least amount. It's 10% of our overall budget. The biggest chunk comes from the state, and then most of the rest comes locally. So usually at this time of year, we know exactly what we're getting from the federal government. The state's very uncertain. And then even at the local level, though we don't know the exact amount, we do know the overall projection of revenue at the county level. So we know they're either up, and we might be able to reasonably request a portion of that increased revenue, or they are not seeing increases. They're in deficit, and we're going to be asked to take part of that cut. This year, because of the property revaluations, there's a lot of uncertainty at the local level. And so I've been reaching out. I have a great partnership with the county manager, Harry Jones, and I really appreciate his friendship and leadership. And so we've been having this conversation over the next couple of weeks. We know that there'll be more clarity around the county financing, but trying to come up with your budget when We don't know this year at the federal government what's going to happen because of sequestration. We know we're going to get cut, but we have not been told yet how much and in what areas. The state is still very uncertain, and then this year the local situation is more uncertain than it usually is because of those property revaluations. But we're still have to go through our process. We still present a budget to our board, and this budget really has reflected a lot of deep listening to our community.
And yet, despite all these uncertainties, you have come across with some wants. CMS wants to give all of its employees raises. You want more technology in the classroom and more choices for students. And to that end, your budget request would bring the schools $28.5 million more this year than last year. Is that just from the county, or is that from the state and the county?
$28.5 million is the additional request to the county. Overall, the budget request, our budget this year compared to last year, our total budget is about 2.8% higher. While it would, at the beginning you said about returning us to pre-recession levels, I will still say it's still below the per-pupil expenditure back in 2009. In the $28.5 million request, I think it's really important because you said want. There's want and absolute need. $17.5 million of the $28.5 million is for growth and sustaining operations. We have continued to grow. We've grown over the last several years 5%. We are going to be welcoming an additional close to 3,000 students next year. We welcomed about that same amount this past year. So because we continue to grow, because we continue to bring in new students, because there are mandated costs that we are required to from our state in terms of insurance and benefits, $17.5 million of that $28.5 million is growth and sustaining. We have to find that. There are additional initiatives that we think will enhance teaching and learning across our district. We think it'll make us a better school district. Before we did any ask, we looked inwards, and we identified $9 million of cuts and redirections to help offset some of those things that we want to do around technology, around professional development, around partnerships with our community. So the total ask of our county commissioners is $28.5 million. And what I've said repeatedly is as the county revenues get clearer and as we get more certainty, we will have to be very nimble in this budget process.
I think, although you said you want 2% more than you've asked for 2% more than last year, it's 8% more from the county, right?
The total budget, is 2%. Federal, state, local is 2.8% higher this year than last year, but the increased request from the county would be around 8%.
Is that realistic, you think?
Again, we're going to have to wait to see until we get more clarity around the county's revenue. Certainly, if it comes out that they are going to have to experience cuts, then we're going to have to be nimble and we're going to have to readjust our budget. But the issue this year with the property revaluations is, A, we don't know when we're going to get that information. As I understand that process, they may not know until the fall the full extent of that property revaluation by the company doing it. And then they have to decide whether or not they're going to accept that. And then they're going to have to decide in terms of what does that mean for the overall scope of their budget, as well as any potential refunds. So as we get more clarity from the county, and we're working partnership, I appreciate the partnership between our boards. I appreciate the partnership with the county manager. We'll work with them. This is about making a better community. Improving education is a part of that, but we will be good partners.
The schools went through a lot of cuts in the recession. They cut
back. Huge.
Yes. So if you get this money, would that restore all the cuts, or would this go to different things because you're a different superintendent and you see things differently?
Well,
things have changed.
Yeah. So over the last several years, there's been over $285 million of cuts and redirections. So this is a school district like many that have had to adjust to these new financial realities. I'm never a believer in you just go back to restore what there was before. I am a big believer in you look at the here and now. What are the needs today that might be different? Mm-hmm. We have to adjust to our current reality and look to the future. So it's not so much to me about that it's a new superintendent. I'll tell you what I do believe and what a lot of people have said that they really appreciate is we have done a lot of intensive listening as we prepared this budget. We had many, many town hall meetings around our budget. We did a survey with our community. We had close to 11,000 citizens, parents, students, teachers respond to that survey, engaged student government leaders, our task forces. We had amazing themes that just really aligned around more increased technology, around professional development, around building partnerships with our communities. And so you see all of those themes reflected in that budget request. We have really listened to our community.
Mm-hmm. I know the county commission has made rumblings that they need to cut, not add to the budget. And I think that one of your school board members, Rhonda Lennon, has urged you to come up with a plan B, I guess based on what you're hearing out of the county commission. Do you have a plan B?
Yeah, well, I think all of our board members have just said is exactly what we just spoke about at the board meeting on Tuesday. It's not so much that you have a plan B, but what we have to do is be nimble. As we start to see changes at the federal, state, and local level, we're going to have to adjust leading up to the adoption of our board in May's final budget presentation. And so what we're doing with our board is to start going through, constantly updating them about what we're learning about the federal, state, and local budget situations. We will look at trying to prioritize the requests that we've made, and then certainly we will have to adjust. If revenue, sometimes what's happened over the last several years is because the last piece of information we tend to get is around the state budget, and that has the last several years come in a little higher than we had initially planned, then you have to adjust to that. If the county revenues come in higher or lower, we'll have to adjust to that. So I think all of our board members have been pretty united about the fact that they feel strongly about these priorities. They've helped to shape them, but ultimately, if the budget situation changes, we will have to adjust the request.
You mentioned the growth in student population, and prior to the recession, Peter Gorman, your predecessor, said something to the effect that because it was growing so fast, people were moving here so quickly and in such great numbers that it would be impossible to build enough school buildings right. to house them. That if they built, I think, opened a new building a month, we couldn't do it. It wouldn't satisfy the needs. How much did growth of the student population lessen during the recession, and how much has it picked up since we've begun to come out of this a little bit?
Yeah, you know, even during the recession, this has still been a growing school district. When you look at our growth over the last couple of years, it's been over 5%, and actually it was probably a little higher than that, but there was something that the state did with an adjustment of kindergarten entrance age that looked that there was a one-year drop. But last year we grew significantly. We are projecting another spike in enrollment, which is a good thing. It means that people are moving into our community. They still see our school district as a great school district to come and have their children educated in. So we certainly welcome that, but additional students challenges your operating budget. It really challenges your capital budget, and that is sometimes people confuse those things. We have our operating budget, which is how we get our teachers, our instructional programs. Our capital budget is a different source of revenue. That's how we build schools, renovate schools. That has been very challenging. We had a bond referendum in 2007. Almost all of those projects have been completed now, but we have a lot of schools that need relief from over-enrollment. We have schools that desperately need renovation. There are things that we need to do in enhancing academic programming, and so we recently did our 10-year master plan, and we have a lot of needs there too. And even just the first 21 projects, which would really be over-enrollment, relieve overcrowding, address some of those schools that need to be renovated. When you look at those list of projects, that's over $400 million.
The county commission has been talking about finding ways to cut expenses. So is it more likely that they would cut you from last year's levels rather than giving you more money, or would there be a compromise in between somewhere?
Well, it'll be a collaboration. You know, I've always, and when I was in Nevada, believe me, I had to do some serious adjustments to budget, and every year I had to cut our budget. You have to, at the end of the day, do the important things that you do, even if it sometimes is doing more with less. But we'll work with our county commissioners, and again, as they get a clearer sense of their revenues, we will adjust our budget priorities.
Dr. Heath Morrison, Charlotte Mecklenburg School Superintendent, is our guest today. We're talking about the budget, among other things, and we will come back to more of the specifics in that request in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and WTVI PBS Charlotte, presenting the Friday Newsnight lineup with PBS NewsHour, followed by locally produced news and business shows, Off the Record and Carolina Business Review. PBS Charlotte, your home for PBS. And Carolina Raptor Center in the NC Science Festival, with Young Veterinarians Day on the Raptor Trail Saturday from 10 to 2, offering hands-on activities for the family. Details, ncsciencefestival.org. North Korea continues to warn of nuclear war and has advised foreigners to leave South Korea. A panel of experts joins Diane Rehm to assess the North Korean threat in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dr. Heath Morrison, Superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, 704-926-WFAE, 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online, wfae.org/charlottetalks.
At Morning Edition, we follow a simple formula. If we're curious about anything in the world, just about anything, we pick up the phone and call anybody in the world, from top newsmakers to small-town mayors to soldiers in the field. We ask the questions that get at the story behind the headlines. Listen each weekday to a conversation with the world. It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekdays starting at 5 on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. And our guest today is Dr. Heath Morrison, Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Superintendent. We'll go to the phones and I'll share some emails with you. But you just said something off the air that was more optimistic than the conversation we've been having on the air with regard to money, if particularly from the county, that things may not be perhaps as bad as they look.
Well, I think it's uncertain. So take, for example, and this is what we've been trying to do, is to say if there were no property revaluation right now, what would it look like? Because, again, at this time of the year, we've always been able to get a pretty good sense of the county's revenues. Are they up? Are they down? And then this county or district has had to adjust to those things. And so if the county's revenue, absent the property revaluations, were to come in a little higher than last year, that would be a different conversation. So what we have to do is really see, once they have finished the property revaluation, how are they going to, you know, what is that ultimately going to do? Is it, you know, what's the percentage that's going to impact? And then how are they going to handle the refunds? And so I think it's not so much optimistic, it's uncertain. So when something's uncertain, you plan for the best example that it could be. You start to prepare for the worst. And once we get more direction from the county manager and our county commissioners, again, we will be, the word that I like to use is nimble.
Governor McCrory has suggested a 1% pay increase for teachers for the coming school year, but you want to raise all of the salaries of all the employees at CMS. How much?
Well, we appreciate that in the governor's proposed budget, there is a 1% increase for state workers, and that would cover the majority of our workers here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, but some of our workers are funded through local dollars, and so we certainly don't want some of our employees getting a 1% raise and others not. So to complete the governor's proposed 1% increase costs a little over $2 million for us to give every one of our CMS workers a 1% raise. We would love to see the state increase that. So when the legislature makes a final budget, we hope that it will reflect an even more significant pay increase for our teachers.
You're going to lobby the legislature for that.
We are lobbying the legislature for that. Again, I just want to remind everybody, our teachers in North Carolina are ranked 45th out of 50 in terms of funding. They are almost $10,000 below the national average. That makes it very difficult to have the most talented teachers want to come to North Carolina and stay.
But what is the impact of that on performance and how the schools do?
Well, you know, I think what it, you know, at the most obvious measure is people forget that as much as teaching is a joyful profession, as much as teachers love to interact with students every day, it is a job. And so, you know, I mean, when I'm in my schools and I'm talking to a young teacher who's telling me about having to work as soon as they leave the school, that they're going to their part-time job, when I'm seeing people have to leave the teaching profession because they simply can't make it a viable occupation, that has an impact. I mean, our teachers are in the tomorrow business. They are the most direct conduit to us having the ability to raise achievement gaps or close achievement gaps and raise the bar for all students. And so if we are not competitive with other states, if you can go teach in another state, do something that you love, and get paid almost $10,000 more, it's like any other business or industry. The talent of your workforce is a huge part of your overall success.
Put your headphones on. We'll take couple of phone calls here, and we'll begin with the county commissioner.
All right.
Dumont Clark's on the line. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. Mike?
Go ahead.
Appreciate it. I am one of the 9 county commissioners here, and we have taken no position at all yet on the school system's request. So it's really premature, I think, to be saying what a county will or will not do. But I want to make one very good point, and that is one of the things I've heard you mention, you and the superintendent mentioned the county funding over and over and over again, which is critical. But we have a state-funded school system in North Carolina, or the primary funder source is the state of North Carolina. So people tend to think, because it says Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, that the county is the primary source of funding. But the responsibility rests on the members of the General Assembly and our governor to lead the way here. The county certainly is going to supplement, and there are some key responsibilities the county has, which is to build all the, provide most of the money to build the buildings. But this is a state-funded system.
Okay. So what have you heard from the state?
Well, first of all, I appreciate Commissioner Dumont. Dumont is just appreciate all of his support, and have enjoyed the interactions and collaboration that we've had since I became superintendent. And he's absolutely right. As I said, the majority of our funding comes from the state. I've had several individuals say, why are we not trying to push for a higher salary increase in this proposed budget? And what I've said is, we are asking for the state to take that primary responsibility for the increase of teacher salaries. It is an expectation on the state. We have a wonderful opportunity with our county commissioners to supplement that, and that has happened over the last several years. So our teachers in Charlotte-Mecklenburg rank well in the state of North Carolina. But the challenge is that we're not just competing with other school districts in the state of North Carolina. We are competing with school districts all over the country. And so until the state raises the base, then it becomes challenging to ask locally for, because again, as much funding as we get from the county, and we appreciate that, the majority of our funds come from the state, and education is first and fundamentally a state obligation.
So, Dumont Clark, you're politically connected. What are you hearing from the state?
Well, Mike, I hear only what I read in the newspaper, and they seem to be primarily interested in, you know, a lot of what I would call issues like establishing a state religion and, you know, other kind of strange stuff. But the budget is the most important policy statement that any legislative body makes. And I think they need to, we're all our revenue growth and their revenue growth is not what it is, but, I just think that I don't see prospects there for a major increase in funding by the state. 1% increase in a salary probably doesn't keep you ahead of the current rate of inflation, which is about 1% or a little higher in the last year. So it basically just keeps people in place. I mean, to call it a raise, when you figure it basically just, you know, makes your purchasing power equal to what it was at the beginning of the last year, that's not really a raise.
Okay, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Earmarked in your budget a nice chunk of it toward technology in the classroom and technology in the schools. How much money is going to technology? How much money would you like to go to technology? What kind of technology are we talking about? How would it be used?
Well, there are several phases to what we're trying to do with technology. Again, one of the big changes that is happening in education, like all of our lives, is the infusion of technology. And it really is exciting about what technology can do to enhance, inspire teaching and learning. It will never replace a teacher. That's such a human fundamental part of teaching. But technology gives us amazing ways to personalize the learning experience, to be able to differentiate and extend the reach of our best teachers. So what we've done is to, first of all, look at the technology infrastructure in our school district. The reality is this time next year, going back to testing, the state with new Common Core assessments will require all testing to be done online. When I first got here, none of our schools were equipped for the technology infrastructure to do that online testing.
Let me see if I understand this. The kids who take the test will be sitting in front of computers to
take the test? Yeah, the testing, instead of the old paper and bubbling in, it will be done online. So, of course, you need a robust technology infrastructure, online opportunities, and so
again, since they're mandating that, are they supplying the money for the infrastructure?
I think, as the commissioner said, sometimes the expectations coming from the state and the resources don't always match. Uh-huh. So there have been some monies appropriated. There have been some monies through the Race to the Top grant, but not sufficient. So we've had to reprioritize some resources, and so right now we're at about 40% of our schools ready for that technology infrastructure to do just that testing, and then we will be at 100% by August. But that also allows us to have the technology platform to start changing fundamentally the way we teach using technology as a tool. So once you've got the infrastructure right, what we want to do, which is we've learned from other school districts, you don't just give the devices to the students. You can't bypass the teachers. We have to respect our teachers enough, and this gets back to the culture and teacher morale. You can't just bypass the teachers. You have to give the teachers the devices first. You have to train the teachers for those that are not used to technology so that we respect them by giving them the tools and the training. So in our budget request this year, that's exactly what we're asking to do, is to complete our technology infrastructure, give our teachers technology devices, give them the training so that they know how to use it really well, and then start to expand the number of devices and technology we're putting in the hands of our students. Like any other technology in your household, it's not cheap, but it's incredibly important because here's something that people need to understand. Textbook companies are going out of business. They are converting to digital online curriculum. So everything about education is going to be more heavily focused on teaching through technology. And so we can't allow Charlotte Mecklenburg schools to fall behind in that.
Okay. Put your headphones back on. We'll take a call from Tiffany, which happens to be about technology. Tiffany, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Tiffany.
How are you?
Great.
Good, good. I'm a parent. I have a student in elementary school as well as high school. At first, I want to commend you on your leadership and your willingness to listen to parents. But I would like to know, how do you think the new career and technical education courses will help students who may be struggling in school?
Well, thank you, Tiffany. It's a great question. We had a media briefing yesterday at North Mecklenburg High School to emphasize several things that we're trying to promote. You know, I'm the first in my family that graduated and went to college. I'm very proud of that. But what we have to understand is that, you know, our goal in Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools is that every student graduates, and every student graduates with a plan. That plan could go to a 4-year college, 2-year college, or a highly skilled career, or the military. Whatever plan the student chooses best for them, we want to make sure that we support them and we prepare them. And so we are going to expand our career technology opportunities. In our budget and in our plans are a huge focus around new career technology opportunities. And so, for example, in North Mecklenburg, we are trying to be smart and efficient and actually use less resources but improve the overall delivery system. So we're going to create a hub system. We're going to offer a great CTE program at North Mecklenburg and then allow students at Mallard Creek, Hopewell, and Huff to go to North if they have that intense focus around CTE. Trying to offer all those programs at every single school is really impactful in terms of dollars and efficiency. So we think this is a way to increase the opportunity at less cost. We are going to be switching our Hawthorne program to a medical science academy, partnering with CPCC. The medical industry is going to be one of the high growth industries in the country and in this community. So partnering with CPCC, having more students have the opportunity for medical opportunity, is not only going to be better for our students, it'll be better for our community. And an example of the collaboration happening right now between CMS and CPCC.
Yeah, Tiffany, thank you for your call. You want a lot more magnet schools, correct? And different magnets.
I want more options and opportunities for our students. It really, first of all, begins with every one of our schools, every neighborhood school being a great school. Mm-hmm. But then what we're challenging every one of our neighborhood schools to do is through an enhanced program protocol, not only think about what do I need to do to be a great choice for our families, but what can we do to go above and beyond that. So, for example, next year, our Rama Road Elementary School will be a Discovery School. They will partner with Discovery Ed and have some exciting opportunities and choices for students and staff. McClinic Middle School is going to be the first in our school district to offer a program called Teach to One, which is a personalized learning opportunity via technology to give every student a personalized math program. So we want to work with every single one of our schools to have them be able to expand their choices and options. But within that, I want to respect the fact that our parents and our students are telling us there are things that they want to see. Our Moorhead STEM Academy has 1,400 students on the waiting list. Why would we not expand that so that more students have that option? And so what we're trying to, again, is be efficient and be thoughtful. So we are going to reopen one of our schools, Oakhurst, that was closed prior to my arrival. We want to make that not only a STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math magnet, but we want to add the A back in that STEAM because A is arts, and that's very important to our students as well. And so we'll be able to address that 1,400 student waiting list, again, reducing the transportation cost by allowing us to put it back in the academic programs.
And Jerry, I believe, has a comment about magnet schools. Jerry, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My daughter went to Smith Language Academy, which is now Waddell International Language Academy, and she presently is studying engineering at the Berlin School of Technology in Germany, and the only way she could have done that is with the language skills she got from the magnet school in our Charlotte-Mecklenburg system. So I certainly hope that Dr. Morrison will continue to support the magnet system and particularly the language academy system.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your daughter. It sounds like she's not only got a great education, but she's having the opportunity to utilize those language skills, so that's fantastic. Huge supporter of world languages. We know as we prepare our students for the 21st century, students who are multilingual are going to have a huge advantage, and so our academy programs around languages are important. Not only are we going to continue to strengthen them, but we want to expand them. So one of our ideas, again, trying to have that great integration of our operating and capital budgets is we need to help alleviate overcrowding at Albemarle Road Elementary School. In our proposed master plan for facilities, we want to create a K-8 school, make that a partial magnet that would be around language. And so we're going to expand our language options for our students and, again, try to do some other things, too, around overcrowding of schools.
Thank you for your call. We have an email from Jennifer, and I only have about 30 seconds left, but please ask Mr. Morrison about some questions about the governor's plan to remove teaching assistants from the classrooms. Clearly, our governor must not have put his children through public school, or if he did, he must isolate himself from the actual workings of the classroom. Governor McCrory doesn't have children. The teaching assistants are vital in elementary schools for both the students, the primary teacher, and for the assistant who, in effect, gets mentored by the teacher.
Yeah, I appreciate the email. First of all, I just want to say I've had an opportunity to meet Governor McCrory and very excited about his support of trying to improve education in North Carolina. In his budget are some things that are good things for education, and you've already alluded to one, which is the 1% pay increase. We'd like to see that higher. There are some things that are a little concerning. There is a $12.5 million cut to Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools around teacher assistants. Our teacher assistants are vital to what we do. We've got to find a way to try to address that. But I appreciate the email about the importance of our teacher assistants.
Dr. Heath Morrison, Superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. We're out of time. Thank you for the hour. Appreciate
it. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.